That bulldog.
I got to my feet. I'm going with Drool. It looks like Drool, right?
If you say so.
Lula and I moved to the safety of the car, and Lula drove the distance to Beverly's apartment. Beverly's apartment looked a lot like LaWanda's, except Beverly didn't have a recliner. Beverly had a couch hauled up to her television. The couch was partially covered with a blue sheet, and I feared there was a gross stain under the sheet, too terrible for even Beverly to overlook.
You can't come in here now,
Beverly said when she opened the door.
I'm busy. I got my honey here, and we were just getting it on.
More information than I need, Lula said. I just watched a pack of dogs hump Stephanie. I about reached my humping limit for the day.
Those must be LaWanda's dogs,
Beverly said.
I don't know what the deal is with those dogs. I never seen anything like it, and three of them is female.
We're looking for an FTA, I said to Beverly.
Yeah, that's what you're always doing here,
Beverly said.
But I'm not FTA. I didn't do nothing wrong, swear to God.
It's not you, I said. I'm looking for Roger Banker.
Huh,
Beverly said.
That's inconvenient. You gonna arrest him?
We're gonna take him to the station to get rebonded.
Then what? Then you gonna let him go?
Do you want us to let him go? Lula asked.
Well, yeah.
Then that's what we'll do, Lula told her. He'll be in and out. And on top of that, we'll give you a 20 if we get to take him in.
LaWanda and Beverly would give their mother up for spare change.
Okay, I guess I could tell you then,
Beverly said.
He's the honey in the back room, and he might be a little indisposed. Roger,
Beverly called out.
I got a couple ladies out here want to see you.
Bring him back, Roger said. I can handle them. More is better when it comes to ladies.
Lula and I looked at each other and did some eye rolling. Tell him to get dressed and come out here to meet us, I said to Beverly.
You should put some pants on and come out here,
Beverly said.
They don't want to meet up with you in the back room.
We could hear some rustling and fumbling, and Banker strolled out. He was wearing khaki pants and sneakers. No socks, no shirt. I was betting on no underwear.
Roger Banker, Lula said, this here's your lucky day on account of we come to give you a free ride to the clink.
Banker blinked once at Lula and once at me, and then he whirled around and ran for the kitchen door.
Cover the crappy car in the front, I yelled to Lula. It's probably Banker's.
And I took off after Banker, pushing around Beverly, following Banker out the back door. Banker was running fast, long legs gobbling up ground. He jumped a section of chain link and disappeared around the end of the building. I scrambled to follow and got snagged on a piece of wire as I cleared the top of the fence. I ripped myself free and kept going. Banker was maybe half a block ahead of me, but I had him in view. He was on the street, doubling back, running toward his car. And he was slowing down. Good thing, too, because I was dying. I really needed to do more aerobics. The only time I actually worked out was when I was in bed with Morelli, and even then I spent a lot of time on my back. Lula was between Banker and the car. She was in the road looking like a big pissed-off bull about to charge. If I was Banker, I would have thought long and hard about getting around Lula, but I guess Banker didn't feel like he had a lot of options because he never broke stride. Banker ran straight on into Lula. There was a sound like a basketball hitting against a brick wall. Lula went on her ass, and Banker bounced back about 5 feet. I tackled him from behind, and we both went down. I had cuffs in my hand, and I was trying to grab a wrist, but Banker was flailing around.
Help me, I yelled to Lula. Do something!
Out of my way, Lula said.
I rolled free of Banker, and Lula sat down hard on him, simultaneously expelling every molecule of air out of both ends of Banker's body.
Oof!
Banker said. And then he went dead still, spread-eagled on his back, looking like roadkill. I cuffed him and stood free. His eyes were open but glazed, and he was breathing shallow.
Blink if you're okay, I said.
Fuck,
Banker whispered.
Well, what were you thinking? Lula asked down at him, hands on hips. You don't just run into a woman like that. Didn't you see me standing there? I got a mind to sit on you again. I could squash you like a bug if I wanted.
I think I messed myself,
Banker said.
Then you aren't riding in my car, Lula told him. You can walk your sorry behind all the way to the police station.
I hauled Banker up onto his feet and searched his pockets for his car keys. I found the keys plus $20.
Give the money to Beverly, I told Lula. I'll drive him to the station in his car, and you can follow.
Sure,
Lula said. I dragged Banker to the crappy car parked curbside and turned to Lula. You're going to wait for me at the police station, right?
Are you implying I don't always wait?
You never wait.
I can't help it. I got a thing about police stations. It's from my troubled past.
An hour later, I had Banker securely behind bars, and I had the body receipt in my hand, guaranteeing that Vinny wouldn't be out his bond money. I searched the parking lot, but I couldn't find Lula. Big surprise. I called her cell phone. No answer. I tried the office.
Sorry, Connie said. She's not here. She stopped in to say that you had Banker, but then she took off again.
Great. I had half the ass ripped out of my jeans, my shirt was covered with grass stains, and I didn't even want to think about the state of my hair. I was standing in the middle of the public parking lot across from the police station, and I had no car. I could call my father. I could call Morelli. I could call a cab. Problem was, they were all a temporary fix. When I woke up tomorrow, I would be back to square one with no car. Of course, there was still one more choice available to me. Ranger's truck. It was big and black and brand new. It came fully loaded with all sorts of toys and customized options. And it smelled like expensive new leather and Ranger, an aroma second only to chocolate chip cookies baking in the oven. Too bad there were a lot of really good reasons not to use the truck. At the top of the list was the fact that Joe would be nuts. My cell phone chirped in my bag.
It's me, Connie said. Vinny just left for the day, and his last directive was that you're responsible for Carol Cantell. He doesn't want any screw-ups.
Sure, I said. You can count on me. I disconnected, blew out a sigh, and dialed Ranger's man, Tank. The conversation with Tank was short. Yes, Ranger had given him instructions to turn the truck over to me. Delivery would take about 20 minutes. I put the time to good use by rationalizing my actions. I had no choice. I had to take the truck, right? How else would I do my job? And if I didn't do my job, I wouldn't get paid, and then I wouldn't be able to make my rent payment. True, my sister was paying the rent these days on my apartment, and I was living rent-free with Morelli, but that could change at any moment. Suppose Valerie suddenly moved out. What then? And it wasn't as if I was married to Morelli. We could have a big fight, and I could be on my own again. In fact, now that I was getting the truck, a big fight was almost a certainty. This was an exhausting thought. Life was fudging complicated. The truck arrived exactly on time, followed by the black SUV. Tank got out of the truck and handed me the keys. To say that Tank is a big guy is oversimplification. Tank is a tank. His freshly shaved head looks buffed up with pledge. His body is perfectly toned and fat-free. His ass is tight. It's rumored that his morals are loose, and his black T-shirt looks painted onto him. Hard to tell what Tank thinks of me, or, for that matter, if Tank thinks at all.
Call me if there's a problem, Tank said.
Then he got into the SUV and took off. Just like that, I had a truck. Not just any old truck, either. This was a wicked, badass four-door Super Crew with oversized cast aluminum wheels, a whole herd of horses under the hood, tinted windows, and GPS, not to mention a slew of gadgets about which I was clueless. I'd ridden with Ranger, and I knew he always had a gun tucked away, hidden from view. I climbed behind the wheel, felt under the seat, and found the gun. If it had been my truck and my gun, I'd have removed the gun. Ranger left it in place. Trusting. I cautiously turned the key in the ignition and eased the truck into the flow of traffic. The Buick drove like a refrigerator with wheels. The truck drove like a monster Porsche. I decided if I was going to drive the truck, I was going to need a whole new wardrobe. My clothes weren't cool enough, and I needed more basic black. And I should trade in my sneakers for boots, and probably I needed sexier underwear. A thong, maybe. I crossed town, drove a couple blocks on Hamilton, and slipped into the burg. I was taking the long way home to Joe's house. Always procrastinate the unpleasant. Morelli wouldn't be happy about me going off with Lula, but he'd understand. Going off with Lula when he'd asked me to stay in the house would generate the sort of anger that could be worked off with a half hour of vicious channel surfing. The truck was going to provoke a full-blown contest of wills. I turned the corner onto Slater and felt my heart roll over in my chest. Morelli was home. His SUV was parked in front of the house. I lined up behind the SUV and told myself it might not be so bad. Morelli was a reasonable guy, right? He'd see that I had no choice. I had to take Ranger's truck. It was a sensible thing to do. And besides, it was my business. Just because you lived with someone didn't mean they ran your life. I didn't tell Morelli how to conduct his business, did I? Well, okay. Maybe once in a while I stuck my nose in there. But he never listened to me. That's the important point here. Problem was, it wasn't actually about the truck. It was about Ranger. Morelli knew he might not be able to help me if I was standing next to Ranger when Ranger was operating outside the law. And Morelli had enough of his own wild years to understand the feral side of Ranger's sexuality. Another good reason not to have me standing too close to Ranger. I swung out of the truck, beeped it locked, and marched up to the house. I opened the door, and Bob rushed up to me and bounced around. I gave him some hugs and got some Bob slobber on my jeans. I didn't mind about the slobber. It seemed like a small price to pay for unconditional love. And besides, you could hardly notice the slobber mixed in with the grass and dirt stains and God knew what else. Bob sniffed at the God knew what else and backed off. Bob had standards. Morelli didn't rush to greet me. He didn't bounce around or slobber or exude unconditional love. Morelli was slouched on the couch, watching the Three Stooges on television.
"So," he said when I came into the room.
"So," I answered.
"What's with the truck?"
"What truck?" He cut his eyes to me. "Oh," I said, "that truck. That's Ranger's truck. He's letting me borrow it until I get the Buick back."
"Has the truck got a VIN?"
"Of course it has a VIN."
"Is the VIN legitimate?" would have been a better question.
Ranger has a seemingly inexhaustible supply of new black cars and trucks. The origin of these vehicles is unknown. The vehicle identification tag is almost always in place, but it seems possible the Batcave might contain a metal shop. Not that Ranger or any of his men would actually steal a car, but maybe they wouldn't ask too many questions upon delivery.
"You could have borrowed my SUV," Morelli said.
"You didn't offer it to me."
"Because I wanted you to stay in the house today. One day," Morelli said. "Was that too much to ask?"
"I stayed in the house for most of the day."
"Most of the day isn't all of the day."
"What about tomorrow?"
"It's going to be ugly," Morelli said. "You're going to be on a rant about women's equality and personal freedom, and I'm going to be waving my arms and yelling because I'm an Italian cop, and that's what we do when women are irrational."
"It's not about women's equality and personal freedom. This isn't political. It's personal. I want you to support my career choice."
"You don't have a career," Morelli said. "You have a suicide mission. Most women try to avoid murderers and rapists. I have a girlfriend who goes out trying to find them. And if murderers and rapists weren't bad enough, now you've pissed off a gang."
"These gang people should get a grip. The least little thing and they're all bent out of shape. What's the deal with them?"
"That's how they have fun," Morelli said.
"Maybe the police should try to get them involved in a hobby like woodworking or something."
"Yeah, maybe we could get it to replace all the drug dealing and killings they're doing now."
"Are they really that bad?"
"Yes, they're really that bad."
Morelli shut the television off and came over to me.
"What the hell happened to you?"
he said, looking more closely at my jeans. "I had to run Roger Banker down."
"What's this in your hair?"
"I'm hoping it's dog drool."
"I don't get it," Morelli said. "Other women are happy to stay home. My sister stays home. My brother's wives stay home. My mother stays home. My grandmother stays home."
"Your grandmother is insane."
"You're right. My grandmother doesn't count."
"I'm sure there'll be a time in my life when I want to stay home. This isn't it," I said.
"So I'm ahead of my time?"
I smiled at him and kissed him lightly on the lips. "Yeah." He pulled me close to him.
You don't expect me to wait, do you?
Yep.
I'm not good at waiting.
Deal with it, I said, pushing away. Morelli narrowed his eyes.
Deal with it? Excuse me?
Okay, maybe I said it a little more authoritatively than I'd intended. But my day hadn't been all that great. Plus, I was feeling just a tad defensive over the foreign substance in my hair that might have been drool, but then maybe not. I could have ended the conversation there, but I didn't think it was smart to back down on the issue. And truth is, I was working my way out of Morelli's house. I'm not staying home, end of discussion.
The hell this is the end, Morelli said.
Oh yeah? Well, end this. And I gave him the finger and headed for the stairs.
Very adult, Morelli said. Nice to know you've thought this through and have it reduced to a hand gesture.
I've thought it through and I have a plan. I'm leaving. Morelli followed me upstairs.
Leaving? That's a plan?
It's a temporary plan. I took the laundry basket from the closet and started putting clothes in it.
I have a plan too, Morelli said. It's called You're Staying.
We'll do your plan next time. I emptied my lingerie drawer into the basket.
What's this? Morelli said, picking out lavender string bikini underpants. I like these. You want to fool around?
No. Actually, I sort of did, but it didn't seem in keeping with the current plan. I gathered up some things from the bathroom, added them to the basket, and carted the basket downstairs. Then I lugged the hamster cage from the kitchen and put it on top of the clothes in the basket.
You're serious about this, Morelli said.
I'm not going to start every day off with an argument about hiding in the house.
You don't have to hide in the house forever. Just lower your visibility for a few days, and it would be nice if you'd stop looking for trouble.
I hefted the laundry basket and pushed past him to the door. On the surface, that sounds reasonable, but the reality of it is that I give up my job and hide. I was telling the truth. I didn't want to start every day off with an argument, but I also didn't want to wake up to more graffiti on Joe's house. I didn't want a firebomb thrown through his front window. I didn't want a slayer breaking in when I was alone and in the shower. I needed a place to stay that was unknown to the slayers. Not Morelli's house, not my parents' house, not my apartment. I wouldn't feel completely safe in any of those places, and I didn't want to put anyone in danger. Maybe I was making a big thing out of nothing, but then maybe not. So here I was, idling at the corner of Slater and Chambers with a pleasant, perfectly designed, color-coordinated Martha Stewart laundry basket on the seat beside me, filled with all the clean clothes I could find, a hamster cage wedged into the seat behind me, and no place to go. I told Morelli I was going home to my parents' house, but it had been a fib. The truth was, I walked out without totally thinking the whole thing through. My best friend Mary Lou was married and had a pack of kids. No room there. Lula lived in a closet. No room there either. The sun was setting, and I was feeling panicky. I could sleep in Ranger's truck, but it didn't have a bathroom. I'd have to go to the mobile station on the corner to use the toilet. And what about a shower? The mobile station didn't have a shower. How was I going to get the drool out of my hair? And Rex? This was so pathetic, I thought. My hamster was homeless. A flashy black Lexus SUV made its way up Slater. I slid low in the seat and held my breath as the Lexus rolled forward. Hard to see through the SUV's tinted windows. Could be anyone driving, I told myself. Could be a perfectly nice family in the Lexus. But in my gut, I worried that they were slayers. The Lexus stopped in front of Morelli's house. The bass from the SUV stereo thumped down the street and beat against my windshield. After a long moment, the SUV moved off. Looking for me, I thought. And then I burst into tears. I was in emotion overload, feeling sorry for myself. A bunch of gang guys were out to get me. The police had Big Blue, and I'd moved out on Morelli for the umpteenth time. Rex had come out of his soup can and was hunkered down on his wheel, myopically surveying his new surroundings.
Look at me, I said to Rex. I'm a mess. I'm hysterical. I need a donut.
Rex got all perky at that. Rex was always up for a donut. I called Morelli on my cell and told him about the Lexus. Just thought you should know, I said. Be careful when you go out of the house, and maybe you shouldn't stand in front of any windows.
They're not out for me, Morelli said.
I nodded agreement in the dark truck and disconnected. I drove a half mile down Hamilton and pulled into the drive-through lane at Dunkin' Donuts. Is this a great country or what? You don't even have to get out of your car to get a donut. Good thing, too, because I looked a wreck. Besides the grass-stained, ripped-up clothes, my eyes were all red and splotchy from crying. I got a dozen donuts, parked in the back of the lot, and dug in. I gave Rex part of a jelly donut and a piece from a pumpkin spice donut. I figured pumpkin was good for him. After eating half the bag, I was sick enough not to care about Morelli or the gang guys.
I ate too many donuts, I said to Rex. I need to lie down or burp or something.
I checked out my shirt. Big glob of jelly on my boob. Perfect. The engine was off, and the only diode blinking was for the anti-theft system. I turned the key, and the dash lit up like Christmas. I touched one of the buttons, and the GPS screen slid into place. After a few seconds, a map appeared, pinpointing my location. Very slick. I touched the screen, and a series of commands appeared. One of the commands was return route. I touched the screen, and a yellow line took me from Dunkin' Donuts back to Morelli's house. Just for the hell of it, I pulled out of the lot and followed the line. Minutes later, I was at Morelli's house. Interesting thing is, the line didn't stop there. I continued to follow the line, and after a couple blocks, I got really excited, because I knew where I was going. The line was taking me to the police station. And if the line led me to the police station, maybe it would also retrace the route Tank took when he brought the truck to me. If the computer stored enough information, there was the possibility that it might take me to the Batcave. Chapter 6. I reached the police station, and sure enough, the yellow line kept going. I was moving back toward the river, into an area of renovated office buildings and street-level businesses. Now I had a new problem. The yellow line could go on forever. It could go right past the Batcave, and I'd never know. And just as I was thinking this, the yellow line stopped. I was on Haywood Street. It was a side street with minimal traffic, two blocks away from the noise and frustration of city center rush hour gridlock. A series of four-story townhouses ran along the north side of the street. A couple office buildings occupied the south side. I had no idea where to go from here. None of the townhouses had an attached garage, and there was no on-street parking. I circled the block, looking for an alley with rear-access parking. None. This was a good central location, and one of the townhouses would make a good bat cave, but I couldn't see Ranger parking his truck any distance from his house. I was idling in front of an office building with underground parking. Ranger could park in the underground garage, but even then he'd have to cross the street to get to the townhouse. Not a big deal for an ordinary person. Seemed out of character for Ranger. Ranger sat with his back to the wall. Ranger never left himself exposed. The other possibilities weren't as much fun. The computer could simply have run out of allotted space, and Haywood Street meant nothing. Or Tank could have taken Ranger's truck and parked it convenient to the Tank Cave. Lights were on in most of the townhouses. The office buildings were mostly dark. The building with parking was a relatively small seven-story structure. The foyer plus floors 6 and 5 were lit. I rolled back a couple feet so I could see through the large glass double door. The foyer looked newly renovated. Elevators to the rear, reception desk to one side. There was a uniformed guy behind the reception desk. A two-lane entrance to the underground parking garage sat like a black gap in the building facade. I pulled into the parking garage entrance, but I was stopped by a machine that demanded a passkey. A heavy iron gate barred my way. I squinted into the dark interior and got a rush. I was pretty sure I was looking at a black Porsche parked nose in to the back wall. I hit my high beams, but the angle of the truck didn't splash a lot of light around the garage. Fortunately, Ranger carried a full array of bounty hunter toys. I retrieved a 3-pound maglite from the back seat, swung out of the truck, and played the light around the expanse of the garage. The back wall held a stairwell and elevator. There were 4 parking spaces in front of the elevator. The first 2 were empty. Ranger's Porsche Turbo filled the 3rd. A Porsche Cayenne filled the 4th. His Mercedes was missing, and I had the truck. 2 black SUVs were parked on the side wall. "It's the Batcave," I said to Rex when I got back behind the wheel. Kind of fun to finally have found it. But now what? Ranger was off somewhere, and I still didn't have a place to spend the night. I stared into the dark garage. I had no place to stay, and Dollars to Donuts sitting in front of me was a building with a vacant apartment. "Don't even think about it," I said to myself. "That's like a death wish. This man is fanatical about protecting his privacy. He won't be happy to find you've broken into his apartment and done the Goldilocks thing." There was a part of my brain that was in charge of stupid ideas. When I was 7, it told me to jump off my parents' garage roof to see if I could fly. It also encouraged me to play choo-choo with Joe Morelli when I was a kid. Morelli was the originator of choo-choo. Morelli was the choo-choo train, and I was the tunnel. And, as it turned out, it was necessary for the train to spend a lot of time under my skirt. Later in life, the stupid idea part of my brain encouraged me to marry Dickie Orr. Orr was a slick talker who had a roving eye. Less than a year after the wedding, other body parts that belonged to Orr started roving as well. And that was the end of that marriage. The stupid idea part of my brain was now telling me I might be able to break in and go undetected. "Just for one night," it said. "Do it for Rex's sake. Poor Rex needs a place to spend the night." I backed out of the garage entrance and drove around the block, hoping the stupid idea department would shut down. Unfortunately, it was still up and running when I returned to Ranger's building. I had his truck. He hadn't bothered to remove his gun. Maybe he hadn't bothered to remove his passkey. I checked the visor and the console. I checked the side door pockets and the glove box. I was looking for a plastic credit card type key that would slide into the machine. I backed out a 2nd time, drove to the corner, and parked under a streetlight so I could better see the interior of the truck. Still couldn't find the passkey. I looked down at the key in the ignition. There was an extra key and 2 small black plastic devices attached to the key ring. One was a remote to unlock the truck. The 2nd was also a remote of some sort. I circled the block, pulled into the garage entrance, pushed a button on the 2nd remote, and the gate slid open. "Stephanie," I said to myself, "if you have any sense at all, you'll turn tail and get out of here as fast as possible." Yeah, right. I'd gotten this far. How could I possibly not want to explore further? I mean, this was the Batcave, for crying out loud. There were 2 SUVs parked to the side. That meant Ranger wasn't the only person to use this garage. It would be awkward for Tank or one of Ranger's other men to discover Ranger's truck had wandered home, so I retreated from the driveway and parked on the next block. Then I walked back to the garage, let myself in, and remoted the iron gate closed. I stepped into the elevator and looked at the panel. 7 buttons, plus garage. I bypassed the security guard at the desk on the 1st floor and pressed number 2. The elevator rose 2 floors, and the doors opened to a large, darkened reception area that I assumed led to offices. Floors 3 and 4 were similar. I skipped 5 and 6, since these were the lighted and presumably occupied floors. And the 7 button wouldn't work. The elevator would go down, but it wouldn't go all the way up to 7. The penthouse, I thought. The dragon's lair. It needed a passkey. Just for the hell of it, I aimed the garage remote at the panel and hit the remote button. The elevator silently rose to floor 7 and opened. I stepped out to a small reception area with a patterned white and black marble floor and off-white walls. No windows, a break front on one of the walls, 1 door in front of me. I'd like to say that I was very cool about all this, but the truth is, my heart was pounding so hard it was blurring my vision. If the door opened and Ranger looked out at me, I'd fall over dead on the spot. And what if he had a woman with him? What would I do? I wouldn't do anything, I reasoned, because I'd be dead, remember? I held my breath and remoted the door. I turned the knob. Couldn't get in. I looked more closely at the door. It had a deadbolt. I inserted the extra key, and the door opened. Now I had a real dilemma. Up to this point, I wasn't feeling especially invasive. I'd discovered the location of Ranger's base of operations. In truth, not such a big deal. However, once I crossed the threshold in front of me, I was in Ranger's private space, and I was uninvited. This was officially breaking and entering. Not only was it illegal, it was rude. The stupid part of my brain kicked in again. Yes, it said, but how about all those times Ranger let himself into your apartment? Half the time you were asleep, and he scared the bejeebers out of you. Can you ever remember one time that he knocked first? Maybe one time, I answered. It stood to reason that he'd knocked at least once. But hard as I tried, I couldn't recall him ever knocking. Ranger slipped in like smoke under the door. I took a deep breath and stepped over the threshold. Hello, I called softly. Anybody home? Yoo-hoo! Nothing. Not a sound. The reception area had been lit, but the apartment was dark. I was standing in a small hallway foyer. An antique wood sideboard was against the wall to my right. There was a tray on the sideboard that looked like it was supposed to hold keys, so I dropped Ranger's keys in the tray. I flipped the switch by the door, and two side-by-side candlestick lamps, also on the sideboard, blinked on. The foyer area was defined by an arch, and beyond the arch, the living room opened directly in front of me. Kitchen and dining area to the right of the living room, bedroom suite to the left. The apartment was larger than mine, and miles more opulent. Ranger had furniture. Expensive furniture. It was an eclectic mix of antique and modern, lots of wood and black leather, marble in the small powder room off the foyer. Hard to imagine Ranger moving through these rooms dressed in SWAT black. The apartment felt masculine, but more like cashmere sweater and Italian loafers than bounty hunter fatigues. Okay. Maybe jeans and boots and cashmere sweater, but that was a stretch. The jeans would have to be excellent. The kitchen was gourmet and stainless steel. I peeked in the refrigerator. Eggs, fat-free milk, 4 bottles of Corona, a plastic container of rustic olives, and the usual condiments. Apples, limes, and eating oranges in the crisper. Brie and cheddar in the dairy drawer. All jars and shelves were immaculate. Nothing but ice cubes in the freezer. Spartan, I thought. I looked through the cupboards. Organic unsweetened granola, a jar of honey, an unopened box of crackers, green tea, a foil bag of Kona coffee beans, a foil pack of smoked salmon, and a foil pack of tuna. Yeesh. No Cap'n Crunch, no peanut butter, no Entenmann's coffee cake? How could anyone live like this? I prowled through the living room into the bedroom area. There was a small sitting room with a comfy, clubby couch and large-screen plasma TV. The bedroom opened off the sitting room. King-size bed, perfectly made. 4 king pillows in shams matching the ivory sheets trimmed with 3 narrow ribbons of dark brown piping. All looked like they'd been ironed. A lightweight down comforter encased in a matching dark brown duvet covered the bed. No spread. Blanket chest at the foot of the bed. Brass lamps with black shades on tables. Fabrics on chairs and curtains were earth tones, very subdued and classy. I'm not sure what I expected from Ranger, but it wasn't this. In fact, I was having some doubts that he lived here. It was a great apartment, but there were no personal touches. No photographs in the living room. No book on the nightstand next to the bed. The master bath and dressing room attached to the bedroom. I stepped into the bath and went momentarily breathless. The room very faintly smelled like Ranger. I prowled around and discovered the scent was from the soap. Again, as in the rest of the house, nothing was out of place. Towels were neatly stacked.
ivory and dark brown, matching the sheets, very plush. The thought of them next to a naked ranger gave me a rush that buckled my knees. The double sink was soap scum free and set into a marble countertop. Toiletries were displayed to the left, straight edge and electric razor to the right. No tub, but there was a large marble and glass walk-in shower. White terry robe on a hook by the shower. The dressing room was filled with clothes, a mix of work and casual. I recognized the work clothes. The ranger who wore the casual hadn't been a part of my life. Everything was neatly hung or folded, no dirty socks on the floor, everything perfectly pressed. Thank God no ladies' lingerie, no birth control pills or box of tampons. I decided there were two possibilities. Either Ranger lived with his mother, or else he had a housekeeper. I didn't see any evidence of a little Cuban lady in residence, so I was going with the housekeeper theory. So, I said to the empty apartment, nobody'd mind if I stayed here tonight, right? Since no one objected, I took it as a positive sign. 10 minutes later, I was back in the apartment with Rex and a change of clothes. I set Rex's cage on a kitchen counter and gave him a chunk of apple. I ate the rest of the apple and wandered into the sitting room. I sunk into the comfy couch and picked up the remote for the television. Total space age. I hadn't a clue what to do with all the buttons. No wonder Ranger said he never watched television. I gave up on the television and migrated into the bedroom. I was tired, and the bed looked inviting, but the thought of sliding between Ranger's sheets had me in a cold sweat. Get over it, I told myself. It's not like he's here. Yes, I answered, but these are his sheets, for cripe's sake, his personal sheets. I did some chewing on my lower lip. On the other hand, they'd obviously been laundered since he'd slept in them, so it wasn't all that personal, right? Problem number two. I didn't want to contaminate the sheets with the gunk in my hair. This meant I'd have to shower in Ranger's bathroom. A shower meant I'd have to get naked, and the thought of being naked in Ranger's bathroom brought back the cold sweat. Just do it, I told myself. Be an adult. Unfortunately, being an adult was part of the dilemma. I was having a very adult reaction to getting naked in the shower. An uncomfortable mix of desire and acute embarrassment. I ordered myself to ignore it all. I squinched my eyes closed and took my clothes off. I opened my eyes, adjusted the water, and stepped under the spray. Serious. Down to business. Get the gunk out of my hair. Get out of the shower. Halfway through lathering with Ranger shower gel, I was barely able to focus. The scent seemed to swell around me. I was hot and slippery with shower gel, and I was surrounded by essence of Ranger. Agony. Ecstasy. I was living a wet dream. Yikes. Next time I broke into Ranger's apartment, I would bring my own soap. I scrubbed my hair with a vengeance, rushed out of the shower, and toweled off. Yes, these were Ranger's towels, and God only knows what they've touched, so don't go there. This was not exactly a silent thought. This was more of a mental shriek. I got dressed in undies and t-shirt and marched off to bed. I slipped under the covers. I closed my eyes and groaned. It was heaven, like floating on a 700-thread count cloud. Total comfort, except for the uneasy feeling of impending doom. The room was still dark when I awoke the next morning. Curtains were drawn throughout the apartment, and I wasn't about to open them. Didn't want to broadcast my presence. I rolled out of bed and went straight to the shower. It was daytime. I was feeling much more brave, and God help me, I was looking forward to Ranger's shower. I was a shower gel slut. After the shower, I had an orange and some granola for breakfast. I got through the night, and I survived the shower, I said to Rex, sharing a slice of orange with him, dropping some granola in his food dish. I don't know why I was so worried. Probably Ranger wouldn't even mind that I was here. After all, he slept in my bed and used my shower. Of course, I was in them at the time. Still, what's good for the gander is good for the goose, don't you think? The apartment was quiet and comfortable, and I was feeling less like an intruder. This isn't too different from living with Morelli, I told Rex.
I was a guest there, and I'm a guest here. The fact that Ranger didn't know I was a guest was starting to seem like a technicality. Don't worry, I said. I'm going to get our apartment back. All I have to do is find a place for Valerie, and hopefully the Slayer problem will go away. I didn't expect Ranger would be home anytime soon, but I wrote a note of explanation just in case and propped it on Rex's cage. I closed Ranger's front door behind me and remoted it locked. Then I took the stairs, stopping periodically to listen for footfalls, keeping alert for the sound of a fire door opening above or below me. I cracked the door to the garage and peeked out. Ranger's two cars were still in place. The SUVs had multiplied overnight. There were now four of them parked side by side. No humans walking around, so I scuttled across the garage, opened the gate, and hurried up the street to the truck. I hauled myself up behind the wheel, locked the doors around me, and sat for a moment in the silence, inhaling the delicious aroma of leather seats and Ranger. I sniffed my arm and groaned. The Ranger smell was coming from me. He'd given me his truck, and I'd moved into his home. I'd slept in his bed, and I'd showered with his shower gel. I couldn't imagine what would follow if he found out. Ranger rarely showed emotion. He was more a man of action, throwing people against walls and out windows, never breaking a sweat, his face perfectly composed. "Now you've made me mad," he'd calmly say, and then bodies would fly through the air. The bodies always belonged to scumbags who'd done really bad things, so the carnage wasn't totally unjustified. Still, it was a scary and awesome spectacle to watch. I didn't think Ranger would throw me against a wall or out a window. My fear was more that we'd stop being friends, and there was also a small fear that retribution would be sexual. Ranger would never do anything that wasn't consensual. Problem was, once Ranger truly invaded my space, there wasn't a lot I didn't eventually consent to. Ranger was very good in close. Okay, so what's up for the day? Harold Panchek was my only outstanding case. I needed to work at finding Panchek. Probably I should check up on Carol Cantell. I should stay out of Slayerland. And I needed to find an apartment for Valerie. A call to Morelli was in the number one slot. Hey, I said when he answered. Just wanted to make sure you're okay.
Where are you?
I'm in the truck on the way to work. Any new damage from the Slayers?
No, it was a quiet night after you left. So what's the deal? Are you coming back?
No, never. We both knew that was a big fib. I always came back.
One of these days we should probably grow up, Morelli said.
Yeah, I said, but I don't think we should feel rushed into it.
I'm thinking I might ask Joyce Barnhart out on a date.
Joyce Barnhart was a total skank and my archenemy. That would be a definite detour off the road to maturity, I told him. Morelli gave a snort of laughter and hung up. Half an hour later, I was in the office, and Connie and Lula were standing, noses pressed to the front window.
That vehicle sitting at the curb looks like Ranger's personal truck, Lula said.
It's a loaner, I told her.
Yeah, but it's Ranger's, right?
Yep, it's Ranger's. Oh, boy, Connie said. No strings attached, I told them. Lula and Connie smiled. There were always strings attached. They'd plots if they knew about the Batcave. For that matter, I was having a hard time not plotting when I thought about the Batcave. Today is Harold Panchek Day, I said.
He's a no-brainer, Connie said. I've been checking on him. He works at the multiplex. Shows up every day at 2 and works until 10. If you can't get him at home, you can get him at work.
Have you tried calling him?
I reached him once and he told me he'd come in for rescheduling. He was a no-show on that. And now I get a machine when I call.
I vote we get him tonight at the multiplex, Lula said. There's a movie I want to see. It's that one where the world gets blown up and there's only mutants left. I saw the ad on television, and one of those mutants is really fine. We could go to the movie and then snag old Harold on the way out.
She was thumbing through the paper on Connie's desk, searching for the entertainment page.
Here it is. The movie starts at 7:30.
The plan had a lot going for it. It would give me the entire day to try to find a place for Valerie, and it would take up some of my night. I didn't want to go back to Ranger's apartment until the building was in low-to-no traffic mode. Plus, I'd seen those ads Lula was talking about, and the mutant was extremely fine. Okie dokie, I said. We'll go tonight. I'll pick you up at 6:30.
You're going to be in the bat truck, right?
It's all I've got.
I bet you get a tingle when you sit in it, Lula said. I can't wait. I want to try behind the wheel. I bet you feel like a real badass behind the wheel.
Mostly I felt like I was wearing someone else's underpants. Considering it was Range's underpants, figuratively speaking, the feeling wasn't entirely unpleasant.
What are you doing for the rest of the day? Lula wanted to know.
I took Connie's paper and turned to real estate. I'm looking for an apartment for Valerie. She's not showing a lot of motivation to vacate mine, so I thought I'd help her out.
I thought you were all settled in with Morelli, Lula said. Uh-oh, is there trouble in paradise?
I started circling rentals. No trouble, I just want my own space back. I was concentrating on the paper, not looking up, not wanting to see Lula's and Connie's reactions. I finished circling, folded the paper, and put it in my shoulder bag. I'm taking the back end of your paper, I said to Connie, and there's no trouble.
Huh, Lula said.
She leaned forward and sniffed.
Damned if you don't smell good. You smell just like Ranger.
Must be the truck, I said. I'd barely gotten out the door when my cell phone rang. It's your mother, my mother said, as if I wouldn't know her voice. Everybody's here, and we were wondering if you could stop by for just a second to take a look at some dress colors. We picked out a gown, but we need to make sure it's okay with you. Everybody? Valerie and the wedding planner.
The wedding planner? You mean Sally?
I never realized he knew so much about fabric and accessorizing, my mother said. Grandma Mazur was at the door waiting for me when I parked behind the big yellow school bus in front of my parents' house.
Now that's a truck, she said, eyeballing Ranger's Ford. I wouldn't mind having a truck like that. I bet it's got leather seats and everything.
She leaned forward and sniffed.
And don't you smell good? What is that, a new perfume?
It's soap, and it won't go away.
It smells sorta sexy.
Tell me about it. I was in love with myself.
They're all in the kitchen, Grandma said. If you want to sit, you have to bring a chair from the dining room.
Not necessary, I told her. I can't stay long. My mother, Valerie, and Sally were having coffee at the kitchen table. There were some fabric samples next to the coffee cake, and Valerie had a couple pages torn from a magazine in front of her. Sit, my mother said. Bring a chair.
Can't. Got things to do.
Sally handed one of the pages to me.
This is a picture of the bridesmaids' dresses. Your dress will be the same, but a different color. I'm still thinking pumpkin.
Sure, I said. Pumpkin would be terrific. Anything would be okay at this point. I didn't want to be a party pooper, but I had other things on my mind.
What things do you have to do? Grandma wanted to know.
Bounty hunter things. My mother made the sign of the cross.
You should see Stephanie's new truck, Grandma Mazur said. It looks like a truck the devil himself would drive.
This got everyone's attention. It's a loaner from Ranger, I said. I had some problems with the Buick, and I haven't got the insurance money from the escape yet. Another sign of the cross from my mother.
What's sticking out of your bag? Grandma asked me. Looks like the want ads in the paper. Are you looking for a car? I could go with you if you're looking for a car. I like cars.
I'm not looking for a car today. Val's been too busy with a new baby to look for an apartment, so I thought I'd help her out. I saw a couple places in the paper that looked interesting. Valerie reached out and took the paper from my bag.
No kidding? Wow, that's really nice of you. Is there anything good in here?
My mother scooted around so she could look at the paper with Valerie. Here's one that's a house for rent, and it says it has a Berg location. That would be perfect, my mother said. The girls could stay in the same school. She looked over at me. Did you call the number? Do you know where this is? I called on the way here. It's a duplex on Moffat Street. The house next to Gino's tomato pie? The owner lives in the other half. I told her I'd stop around this morning.
I know that house, Grandma said. It's pretty nice. Lois Krishovitz used to own that house. She sold it 2 years ago when she broke her hip and had to move into assisted living.
Valerie was on her feet.
Just give me a minute to get a few things together for the baby, and then we can go look at it. We wanted to buy, but we can't seem to scrape together a down payment. This would give us more space in the meantime.
I'll get my purse, my mother said.
I'll come too, Sally said.
Me too, Grandma said.
We can take my bus, Sally said. We'll have more room.
This is going to be cool, Grandma said, starting for the door. We're going to be just like the Partridge Family. Remember when they all traveled around in that bus?
Don't panic, I told myself. We're just going a short distance. If you sit low in your seat, no one will see you. Valerie had the baby in a carrier on her back and the big patchwork quilt diaper bag over her shoulder.
Where's my purse? She asked. I need my purse.
Grandma handed Val her purse, and Val draped her big shoulder bag over her free shoulder. Geez, Val, I said. Let me give you a hand with some of that.
Thanks, she said, but I'm balanced this way. I do this all the time.
I don't mean to sound cynical, but if Val ever needed fast cash, we could probably get her a job as a pack animal. She could work alongside the mules that take people into the Grand Canyon.
I've got my checkbook, my mother said, closing the door behind us, just in case we like the house.
Valerie lumbered down the porch steps, followed by Grandma.
I want the front seat, Grandma said, hurrying along. I don't want to miss anything.
It was a crisp blue sky morning, and Sally's big hoop earrings gleamed gold in the sunlight as he took the wheel. He was wearing a Buzz Lightyear t-shirt, his usual ratty sneakers, and ripped jeans. He had a shark tooth necklace around his neck, and the volume of his hair seemed to have increased since I saw him last. He settled little heart-shaped Lolita-type sunglasses on his big hook nose, and he started the bus.
You gotta turn at the corner, Grandma told him. Then you go two blocks and make a right.
Sally took the first corner wide, and Grandma slid off her seat onto the floor.
Fuck, Sally said, looking down at Grandma.
Snap.
Don't worry about me, Grandma said, righting herself. I just didn't remember to hold on. I don't know how all those little kids do it. These seats are slippery.
The kids are all over the fucking bus all the time, Sally said. Oh, shit.
Snap, snap.
Sounds like you're having a relapse, Grandma said to Sally. You were doing real good for a while there.
I have to concentrate, Sally told her. It's hard to stop doing something that took me years to perfect.
I can see that, Grandma said. And it's a shame you have to give up something you're so good at.
Yeah, but it's for a good cause, Sally said. It's for the little dudes.
Sally eased the bus up to the curb in front of the rental house and opened the door with a whoosh of the hydraulic.
Here we are, he said. Everybody out.
I tagged along after my mother, Grandma Mazur, Valerie and the baby, and Sally as they all hustled up to the front porch. My mother knocked on the landlord's door, and everyone quieted down for a moment. My mother knocked a second time. Still, no one opened the door.
That's odd, Grandma said. I thought she was supposed to be home.
Sally put his ear to the door.
I think I hear someone breathing in there.
Probably she was on the floor having a coronary. A herd of lunatics just got out of a big yellow school bus and descended on her porch.
You better open up if you're in there, Grandma yelled. We got a bounty hunter out here.
The door cracked open, the security chain in place.
Edna, is that you?
The woman asked. Grandma Mazur squinted at the eyes behind the door.
Yup, it's me, she said. Who are you?
Esther Hamish, I always sit by you at bingo.
Esther Hamish, Grandma said. I didn't know you were the one who bought this house.
Yep, Esther said. I had some money socked away from Harry's insurance policy. God bless him, may he rest in peace.
Everyone made the sign of the cross. Rest in peace, we all said.
Well, we come to see about the rental, Grandma told Esther. This here's my granddaughter. She's looking for a place.
How nice, Esther said. Let me get the key. You had me going for a minute there. I've never had a school bus park in front of my house before.
Yeah, Grandma said. It's new to us, too, but we're getting used to it. I like that it's a nice, cheery yellow. It's a real happy color. Problem is, it blocks the view of the street. Of course, I guess it could be worse. We could have our view blocked by one of those vans that carries aliens around.
I was listening to news on the radio, and they said a bunch of aliens were found dead from heat stroke in one of them vans yesterday. Imagine that. Here these poor creatures travel through space to get to us, all those light years and galaxies away, and then they die from heat stroke in a van.
What a shame, Esther said.
I'm just glad it wasn't in front of my house, Grandma said. I'd feel terrible if I had to find E.T. dead in a van.
Chapter 7 Esther Hamish's rental was a lot like my parents' house. Living room, dining room, kitchen on the ground floor. 3 small bedrooms and bath on the second floor. Narrow backyard. Minuscule front yard. A standalone 2-car garage to the rear of the property. The interior was clean but tired. The bathroom and kitchen were serviceable but dated, again, a lot like my parents' house. And clearly, the house was occupied.
When will it be available?
Valerie asked.
2 weeks, Esther said. I have a young family in here now, and they just bought a house. They'll be moving in 2 weeks.
Wait a minute, I said. The paper said immediate occupancy.
Well, 2 weeks is almost immediate, Esther said. When you get to be my age, 2 weeks is nothing.
2 weeks? I'll be dead in 2 weeks. Valerie needs to move out of my apartment now. Valerie turned to my mother.
What do you think?
It's perfect, my mother said.
Esther looked at Sally.
Are you the son-in-law?
Nope, Sally said. I'm the bus driver and the wedding planner.
The son-in-law is a lawyer, my mother said proudly.
Esther perked up when she heard that.
You should take it, Grandma said to Valerie.
Yeah, Sally said. You should take it.
Okay,
Valerie said.
It's a deal.
So here we go again. There's good news and there's bad news. The good news is I'm getting my apartment back. The bad news is I'm not getting it back soon enough. I need a donut, I said, more to myself than anyone else.
That's a good idea, Grandma said. I could go for a donut.
Back to the bus, Sally said. We're all going for donuts.
5 minutes later, Sally was parked in front of Tasty Pastry. The doors whooshed open, and everyone tramped out for celebratory donuts. Grandma picked out 2, my mother picked out 2, Valerie got 2, and Sally got 2, and I got a dozen. I said they were for the office, but if my day didn't improve, there was a good chance I'd eat every last one of them. Renee Platt was behind the counter.
Wow, it's really brave of you to take on the Slayers, she said to me. I sure wouldn't want to mess with any of those guys.
Who are the Slayers? My mother wanted to know. Nobody special, I told my mother, and I didn't take them on.
I heard you went into their territory with a tank and ran over a bunch of them, Renee said, including the head guy, and I heard you're the only one who can identify the Red Devil, and that you've sworn a blood oath to get him.
Oh my God, I said. Who did you hear that from?
Everybody knows, Renee said. It's all over town.
My mother crossed herself and ate her 2 donuts on the spot.
It's the Hungarian side of the family, Grandma said. We're tough. We come from a long line of army deserters and nasty alcoholics.
Probably we should be going home now, I said. My mother looked like the 2 donuts didn't do it. My mother had her lips pressed so tight together her face was turning blue. I was a trial to my mother. We all trooped out to the bus and took our seats.
Let me know if you need help rounding up those Slayers, Grandma said to me. I don't know what they are, but I bet I could kick some Slayer butt.
They're a gang, Sally said. A really bad gang. I have to go through their territory to pick up a couple kids on my bus route, and it's like going through a war zone. They have sentries on the corners and soldiers patrolling the streets. And I don't know what it is, but these guys never smile. They just stand there, staring, like the living dead.
What do gangs do? Grandma wanted to know.
They act tough, Sally said. And these days, they control a lot of the drug traffic, and they kill each other.
I don't know what this world's coming to, Grandma said. Used to be the mob did that. What's left for the mob to do? No wonder Lou Raguzzi looked so bad. I saw him the other day at Steva's, and his shoes were all run down at the heel. He probably can't afford to buy shoes.
Lou's doing fine, my mother said. He's being audited by the IRS. He got those shoes special so he wouldn't look too successful. Everyone crossed themselves at the mention of the IRS. Street gangs and the mob paled in comparison to fear of the tax code.
I'm going to have to take off, Sally said, stopping in front of my parents' house. I have to get across town to start picking the little dudes up.
Thanks for the ride, Grandma said, making her way down the bus steps. Maybe I'll see you tonight. There's a good viewing at Steva's. Charlie Whitehead's laid out, and the Knights of Columbus should be there tonight. They always put on a good show. They're the best of the lodges.
I took Valerie's diaper bag, and my mother took Valerie's purse, and we all followed Grandma off the bus and up to the house. I have to go too, I said, depositing the diaper bag in the hallway. It was nice of you to help your sister find a place, my mother said to me. I hiked my own bag onto my shoulder. Thanks, but it was self-serving. It would have been self-serving to order her out of your apartment. Finding her a house was a nice thing to do. I took my bag of donuts, called goodbye to everyone, and let myself out. I climbed into Ranger's truck, and I sat there for a moment trying to calm myself. I was going to be in big trouble if the rumors got back to the Slayers. The Slayers wouldn't like being run over and hunted down by a pasty-faced white woman. It wasn't the sort of thing that earned gangland prestige points. Not much I can do about it now, I thought. The best I could do was to stay away from them and try to keep a low profile. With any luck, the Slayers would be busy selling drugs and shooting each other and not have time for me. I rolled the engine over, drove the length of the block, turned at the corner, and headed for Joe's house. Security check. I wanted to see for myself that the house was still standing, that no further damage had been done. I'd moved out of the house, but there were still ties, just as there were still ties to Morelli. Truth was, I'd broken up with him so many times it was beginning to feel like the normal thing to do. For that matter, I wasn't sure if we'd actually broken up. It felt more like a reorganization. Morelli Street was pretty much deserted, except for a van in front of Morelli's house. The van belonged to Joe's cousin, Mooch. Mooch was covering the graffiti, painting Joe's front door a bright red. The graffiti was still on the sidewalk, but it didn't look as if anything new had been added. I slowed, but I didn't stop. Mooch didn't look around from his work, and I didn't call out. Next stop was Carol Cantell. I wasn't obligated to check on her every day, but I'd become attached to Carol. How could you not like someone who held up a Frito-Lay truck and then ate the evidence? I parked in front of the Cantell house and walked to the porch. Carol's sister Cindy opened the door before I rang the bell.
We were in the front room and we saw you pull up in the truck, Cindy said. Is something wrong?
I looked around Cindy to Carol. Social visit. I wanted to make sure everything was okay.
I'm feeling a lot better, Carol said. I think I got the chips out of my system.
Cindy leaned closer.
Boy, you smell great, she said to me. You smell like, I don't know, not exactly perfume.
It's shower gel, I said. I borrowed it from a guy I know. Carol came over and sniffed at me.
Is he married?
No.
Would he like to be?
The question stuck with me until I was well out of Cantell's neighborhood. I hadn't a clue to the answer. I worked with Ranger. I drove his truck, and I was living in his apartment. And yet I knew almost nothing about him. A few facts. He'd been married when he was very young, and he had a daughter in Florida. He'd dropped out of college to join the Army. While in the Army, he'd been Special Forces. That was about it. He never shared his thoughts. He rarely showed emotion, a smile once in a while. His apartment yielded little. He had good taste in furniture, leaning toward earth tones, and he had great taste in soap. It was lunchtime, and I hadn't any idea what to do next, so I parked in the shop and bag lot and ate two of the donuts. I was scraping a blob of custard off my shirt when my phone rang.
Where are you?
Morelli wanted to know. I'm in the shop and bag lot, and I'm eating lunch.
Have you heard the rumors?
There are so many. Which ones are you talking about? Morelli gave an exasperated sigh. Oh, I said, those rumors. Yeah, I heard those rumors.
What are you going to do about them?
I'm sort of hiding.
You'd better hide really well, because I'll put you under house arrest if I find you.
On what charges?
Reckless endangerment of self and driving me nuts. Where are you hiding? You're not staying with your parents. I checked.
I'm staying at a friend's place.
Is it safe?
Yep.
Except from the friend. I'd feel better if you sounded more scared, Morelli said. These guys are crazy. They're unpredictable and irrational. They operate under a whole different set of rules.
Morelli disconnected, and it was my turn to give an exasperated sigh. I was trying hard not to be scared,